You are Locked On the NBA, part of the Locked On Podcast Network.
Welcome to your favorite day of the week. This is Locked On NBA. I'm Anthony Irwin. I am not joined by Adam Morris. I am instead joined by Pete Zayas, who hosts Locked On Lakers with me 2 days out of the week and every other week. He is, if you aren't following him, if you're following me or Adam and not Pete, then I'm not sure what you're doing. You can follow him on Twitter at Laker Film Room. Pete, we've spent the last 25 minutes or so talking about the Lakers as they're currently constituted. That's part one of this conversation that we're having. This is part two in this kind of crossover event. After having that conversation and everything that kind of went with it, we're going to extend that into where the Lakers fit with the league right now. Are they a playoff team? If they are a playoff team, will they have home field advantage? What they're capable of, all those things. And it's going to be variable based on what this roster looks like. So segment one is going to focus on how does this team look right now? Segment two is if they make realistic additions to their team. And then segment three is if, you know, the everything goes the Lakers' way and they're able to add Kawhi Leonard. That'll be segment three. Thanks for hopping on with me, though, man.
Hey, thanks for having me, man.
All right, so segment, you guys know where to find the show. Megaphone, Panoply, iTunes, TuneIn, Stitcher, Today's Fast Break, Spotify, Alexa. Silver Screen and Roll for Lakers, for Locked On Lakers. You can follow me on Twitter at Locked On. Anywho, I'm tired, you guys, and it's really hot in the studio. Let's as the Lakers are currently constituted, they added Rajon Rondo, they added JaVale McGee, and they added Lance Stephenson to LeBron James and the rest of this Lakers roster. If JaVale McGee is the starting center on the Lakers on day one of next season, are they a playoff team?
I do think they're a playoff team. They added LeBron, and yep. I think we saw LeBron add, you know, take a 30-win roster to 50 wins last year. Mm-hmm. You know, like LeBron is that good. Now, I think they're probably, without any other additions, I think they're probably a 6 seed or something like that. And the bottom of the West was so tightly compact last year that the difference between being a 5th seed and a 9th seed is really not that significant in the West. But mm-hmm. I mean, for me, like LeBron missing out on the playoffs, like this Lakers team wasn't bad last year. They were a 35-win team. Now Randall's gone. And in this scenario, we're not assuming that Lopez is going to be back. And I think there's a decent likelihood that he ends up back on the team. Mm-hmm. But that hasn't happened yet. But even then, to me, adding LeBron gets you 15-plus wins on just an average team. So, yeah, they're in the playoffs.
We talked about the Lakers, and you mentioned that they were pretty good last year. Now, they only won 35 wins. They only had 35 wins, though I would argue that they were better than your average 35-win team. They lost a lot of close games, and, you know, Lonzo misses 30 games. Ingram missed some time. Josh Hart missed some time. Larry Nance Jr. missed some time. So they had to deal with injuries up and down the roster. Brooke Lopez missed some time too. And so what you get there is a team that only wins 35 games, but fans walked away from the season thinking, you know, that could have been a little bit more. And you add LeBron to that group, and you add a backup point guard to that group in Rajon Rondo. And I think it's people who are arguing that LeBron James isn't going to be in the playoffs. Like, I don't know how you do that with a straight face. That's insane to me.
Yeah, I think that this Lakers team was probably, if they just run it back with the same guys, just through how young they are, they only had one guy in the rotation throughout the year that was over 25 years old, and that was Brooke Lopez. Mm-hmm. Now, Isaiah Thomas came and played, I think, 17 games toward the end of the season. But in terms of somebody who was part of it for the whole way through, Lopez was the only guy. So just through internal improvement, that's what, a 40, 41 team this mm-hmm. year, most likely, just from 20-year-olds turning 21 and 23-year-olds turning 24. So they lost Julius Randle and replaced him with LeBron James, you know. And so I think 40 is kind of the baseline of where they would have been, and then you stacked LeBron on top of that. Yeah.
If the Lakers do make it to the playoffs, that means other teams are going to fall out, right? At least one team has to fall out for the Lakers to slide in there. And if a team is going to fall out, now, I think the obvious choice here, the obvious candidate to fall out of the playoffs would be San Antonio because of everything going on with Kawhi Leonard. Other candidates might be like Portland. Everything went well for them last year. They were remarkably healthy and went up against teams who were not remarkably healthy. I'll just put it that way. That you have New Orleans loses DeMarcus Cousins, though they were better without him. And I think Julius Randle and Anthony Davis actually make a ton of sense together in the front court. But if you were to look at the Western playoffs last season, and if you're going to slot the Lakers in there amongst those teams, who's going to fall out, do you think?
Wow, that's tough. I mean, I'm looking at the standings right now, and it kind of speaks to how packed it is. I do think the Pelicans fall out because I think, you know, they lost Rondo mm-hmm. as well.
Oh, Rondo's a loss too, yeah.
With Elfrid Payton, and which Rondo is not perfect, but he had that offense humming pretty good. And I'm curious about the Randle-Anthony Davis fit in that with both the additions of Payton and Randle, they don't have a ton of spacing around him. Now, it's not like Rondo is providing a ton of spacing either, but, you know, a guy like DeMarcus Cousins or even Mirotić, who's still there, but I'm just curious to see how kind of the floor spacing works because they don't have a lot in the way of wings to make up for that. So the Pelicans are probably the team in there that I think is the weakest. The Spurs as well, although they made it without Kawhi
yeah.
for most of the year,
yep.
And they're probably not going to have him again. I don't see how they can take Kawhi to camp. So, yeah, those are the two teams that look most likely to me. Portland was a 3 seed, although only 3 games away from missing the playoffs altogether.
That's insane.
And it's interesting to hear Lillard start to kind of communicate some dissatisfaction with the whole situation. They're a possibility. Yeah, those look like the 3 most likely, but I'd put Portland behind the other two in terms of likelihood.
Yeah, I would completely agree. All right, we're gonna take a quick second here, and when we come back, we're going to talk about where the Lakers, if they do figure it, you know, if Brook Lopez is added to the roster, if some of the pieces that they added do work out, how that team might figure into the league-wide conversations. We'll do all that here in a second. So the Lakers are going into next season, like I said, with JaVale McGee as their starting center, and that's terrifying as a proclamation. But if they do add Brook Lopez with the remaining $5.5 million or so that they have in cap space, and he does a lot of good things that you need around LeBron. He spaces the floor as a 5. He contests a ton of shots, which is really valuable. One thing I really like that he does is he isn't as focused on his own rebounding. He's more of a team rebounder. He boxes out really well. And if you have a team with like Lonzo Ball, who's an elite rebounder for a point guard who can get out and push it when he gets a rebound, or LeBron, who can obviously board and go, and other guys up and down the roster who you can kind of expect that out of. Like, he makes a ton of sense for the Lakers. So if you add Brook Lopez and say get decent seasons out of first round pick Moritz Wagner and Svi Mykhailiuk, and then, you know, just even decent steps forward from Kyle Kuzma, Josh Hart, Lonzo Ball, Brandon Ingram, I think now you're really talking about a team that might be able to contend for home court advantage in at least the first round.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I think, again, it's difficult to overstate how good LeBron is and how many wins he adds to your mm-hmm. team. I think it's in the high teens just for like an average level team. Now, you know, that if you're talking about a 55 win team, nobody's adding, you know, 20 wins to a 55 win team, but to a 35 win team, mm-hmm. I think he could be close to that. I actually think the Lakers are probably right as it stands with Lopez coming back. If that does indeed happen, I think that's a team that wins low 50s in terms of and that puts them around a 3 or 4 seed.
I don't think literally it can happen as quickly as next season, but there has been a ton of rumblings and prognostication that at some point maybe the league might think about opening up beyond the conference based playoff standings. If that happens, and you just had to start ranking NBA teams, right? So Warriors, Rockets, Boston, Philly, maybe Toronto if they're all kept intact next season. How far down the list do you think you have to go before you start really being able to slot the Lakers into that conversation?
So I think out west you've got Houston and Golden State. The one thing I would say about Golden State, though, is that they're going to be going on their fifth finals run. They've gone from 73 wins to 67, 58 this past season. It wouldn't surprise me at all if they were a low 50s win team this year.
Yeah, just because they're exhausted.
Right, they're exhausted, and they're not going to care as much as the other teams do. We've seen this a couple of times with Shaq and Kobe Lakers, with the Kobe Powell Lakers. That doesn't mean that they're still not the best team in the league by far.
Yeah.
It just means that they view – I mean, they finished seven games behind the Houston Rockets in the regular season this year. So the idea that they continue to decline in regular season wins seems possible to me. But let's still put them ahead. So I'd say Houston, Golden State, Boston – I think Philly. I would put Philly ahead. They were already a 52-win team, and with their best two players being younger. And then there is where I think you start getting into the Lakers are in the conversation. So you got, like, in this bunch, like, Lakers. I think OKC is going to do well next year.
Yeah.
Just having that stability, knowing that, hey, this is our squad. You know, I think they're probably low 50s
as
well.
A full season with Andre Robertson being healthy is going to be huge for them.
Right. Although he is coming off of a torn Achilles, and I think that injury in particular, I don't know, it's claimed a lot of body, and he's so like athletically dependent on he's such a great defender, but part of that is his ability to move. And so I think, you know, what remains to be seen, but I do think OKC is going to be very good. I think that's where you start getting the Lakers in the conversation there with Portland and the Raptors.
Utah.
Yeah, that's around there. Yeah. Utah. Notice. I really like that Utah squad. Yeah. Those are the teams I think that are their company.
Yeah, I would happen to agree. And look, this is what's fun to me. Yes, you have Golden State who are world beaters. But as we talked about, there are a couple cracks that do start showing up around this time in the dynasty kind of era. And you know, you have guys who are getting ready to be free agents next season. You don't know how that might have an effect on the chemistry in the locker room. You have the fatigue that comes on from playing 100 games every single year for the last 5 years. They've played an extra season's worth of games at this point. Mm-hmm. And that really takes a toll. And then also, like, yes, they added DeMarcus Cousins to their team, but they aren't going to have him probably for the first half of the season. And when they do get him back, just like with Robertson, you don't know what kind of a player he's going to be when he does come back. So can Jordan Bell and Kevon Looney really make up that the difference in the meantime while they wait for Boogie? But also, if he comes back and he isn't 100%, can they really step up and be ready to help out? I think, you know, it's going to be a really interesting season this year. And anything can really happen. Boston's getting back Gordon Hayward from a season that he didn't play at all, and they were in the conference finals. Yeah, they were in the conference. It's going to be incredible. It's going to be a really fun year.
Yeah, very much so. I mean, heck, they didn't have Kyrie either come playoff time. So, to me, those teams are clearly ahead of the Lakers. And the only reason I bring Golden State down is, again, that fatigue factor. Like, I love Jordan Bell's game. I really like what Kevon Looney brings to the table. I do think that DeMarcus is going to be – it's interesting because if they had him from training camp on, I'd feel like by playoff time they'd be fine. They'd know how to, like – fit him into what they do. I do think there's, along with the Achilles injury, just that acclimating a guy like that, that's such a high usage guy or has been in the past, his role will change. I do think it could be clunky and they don't have a ton of time to integrate him. But for 1 year, $5.3 million, I mean, you know, can't beat that, right?
Yep. All right. As I mentioned earlier, this is part two of a two-part conversation here with Pete Zayas, Laker Film Room on Twitter. I am Anthony Irwin of Locked On Lakers. We're going to finish this out with segment three by talking about – we're just going to try to talk about the Kawhi Leonard situation, which is insane – which is an insane proclamation in and of its own. But we're gonna try to figure that or factor that or the Damian Lillard potential situation into the Lakers dynamic right now. And if one of those things come to fruition, we'll try to figure out what the Lakers are capable of with that, with a roster built around that. We'll do all that here in a second. We didn't really get to this as much in part one because it seemed to come out of nowhere. But Damian Lillard and being somewhat unhappy, and I don't think he's really necessarily in trade talks, obviously, yet, but his name has come up quite a bit for somebody who you would think is as secure in his spot in an organization as you'll find. What do you think's going on there? And if you're the Lakers or if he hits the open market, what do you think he can net? Because I think he nets by far a lot more than Kawhi Leonard does.
Yeah, he's going to cost you. If you want to trade for Lillard in 3 more years on his contract, I don't think he's as good of a player as a healthy Kawhi Leonard is, but it's just a different position in terms of leverage for the team, right? You know, Portland's got him under contract for 3 more years. Now, and so, yeah, he'd cost a lot. I think, you know, a lot of people have spoken about how Kawhi would cost the Lakers 2 of their young guys. I don't think that's the case. And that's not because Kawhi isn't worth it as a player. It's just a matter of where San Antonio's leverage is. I do think it would cost the Lakers 2 of their young guys for Lillard, though.
Maybe even more.
Maybe. Oh, yeah. No, I mean, just as kind of like the main the main courses of the package. You'll have picks involved, things like that, more ancillary guys. But, I know, go back and listen if you ever get a chance to how LeBron talks about Damian Lillard. Do a YouTube search for any interview. LeBron loves him some Damian Lillard.
Yeah.
And when LeBron comes to your team, he may not be the GM in name. And on a team like the Lakers, he may not be the GM in functionality. He's at least your assistant GM, right? And you run stuff like this by him. And when he says, Lillard, that's my guy, try to get him, you're going to listen. And, you know, Lillard's a hell of a player. To me, it's an attempt to replicate what they had with him and Kyrie.
Yeah, well, that's the exact comparison I was going to make, was between Lillard and Kyrie being on a team with LeBron, you know. It makes a lot of sense on the offensive side of the ball, but I'm not sure about the defensive side of things. If the Lakers are able to add, so let's say it costs the Lakers, in Lillard's case, probably Lonzo, Kuzma, probably even Hart and then picks and stuff. But if you just add Damian Lillard and you put him on a team and your starting five next season is Dame Lillard, Kentavious Caldwell-Pope, Ingram if he's still around. I'm just saying Lonzo because of the position by, you know.
Yeah, no, I think that would be a more likely guy to go out, in a Lillard trade.
If you go Lillard, Kentavious Caldwell-Pope, Ingram, LeBron, and in this case, I don't think you'd be able to add JaVale or Lopez to the team there just because of the cap situation there. So if you go into next season and JaVale McGee is your starting center there, and then you're really hoping that Mo Wagner turns into something. But if that's your team, can they contend against Golden State? I'm of the opinion no, because I think Steph Curry rips Damian Lillard to shreds like regularly.
Yeah, no, that team can't compete with Golden State. And that's why I think the Lakers would be to me, the Lakers' best shot of competing with Golden State is to sign somebody in free agency next year and not have to give anything up and then trade for a third star. So say they sign Kawhi in free agency next summer, then that's when you go after Lillard.
Yeah.
And then I think if you've got Kawhi, LeBron, and Lillard with a couple of the young guys, most of them will be gone, but a couple of them surrounding them, plus all the ring chasers, mid-level exception guys, things like that, I think that's the point where you start being able to beat Golden State, especially with the fatigue that Golden State's under.
Yep. All right, so let's same question, though this time with Kawhi Leonard, who, again, you and I are both in agreement here that the Lakers, we talked about this in part one of the conversation, that I wouldn't include Brandon Ingram in any kind of trade talk with San Antonio because San Antonio just doesn't have the leverage to demand him. But let's say the Lakers offer up Kyle Kuzma, Josh Hart, and a couple first-rounders for Kawhi Leonard. And again, I don't think they wind up including Kyle Kuzma because of how much the organization seems to like him. And most importantly, Jeannie Buss seems to like him quite a bit. And if you're going to have somebody on your team, you're going to want it to be the owner. But if they do send Kuzma and Josh Hart and then the picks to make it work, and they go into next season with Lonzo Ball, Kentavious Caldwell-Pope, Kawhi Leonard, LeBron James, and again, in this case, we won't be able to probably have Brooke Lopez on the team, so it would be JaVale McGee. What's that team capable of?
You still have Ingram, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. I think that team can beat Houston, but I don't think it can beat Golden State.
Yeah. I think Houston's really going to fall. They're going to miss Trevor Ariza.
Yeah. And, yeah, I can see that.
And, you know, he's somebody who will hit because supposedly Phoenix is saying that they don't want to tank another year, that they want to try to compete. You can try to compete all you want, but Phoenix, you're going to be Phoenix next season. And Trevor Ariza as a name that could hit the trade market as we near the trade deadline. Like, there are very few more perfect fits for the Lakers. Like, if they could convince Phoenix to take on Deng's salary and have Ariza expire at the end of the season and open up that much more space. Like, I would offer up pieces just to do that, to be able to do that, because I also am a fan of Trevor Ariza's game. But it depends on, I think, who adds him at the trade deadline. I'm already planning on him being on the market because I don't believe in this Phoenix Suns team. But if they could, whichever team I think adds him will get a nice shot in the arm. And I just Houston scares me, man, because the defense that Trevor Ariza offered on the wing and the shooting that he was able to offer as well, like, you need that on a night-to-night basis when James Harden is Chris Paul's counterpart in the backcourt.
I think the problem there especially is that is a position where they're fairly thin in the Rockets. That was a tough spot to lose a guy like that. Like, Ariza is far from a perfect player, and he's getting older himself. But, you know, the depth at the wing spot, I think, is difficult. And when you're trying to beat – I mean, you're now talking about a conference that has LeBron James and Kevin Durant in it.
Yeah.
And, you know, LeBron's probably going to have his – Right. Like, you know, say Houston is a two seed. If the Lakers are a six or even seven seed, just as they're currently constructed, like, that's – I mean, who defends LeBron?
Yeah.
In a seven-game series? Yeah,
just ask Toronto how that went last year.
Right. And I think the Lakers will be a higher seed than a six or seven seed, but it's possible. It's so closely, you know, packed together that's not out of the question at all. So facing a team like that, like, I don't know. Like, to me, if I'm Morey, I'm really looking to shore up that spot, probably more so on the trade market than anything else. And then you have Capella, who, you know, rumors now are that he's interested in taking the qualifying offer and then being unrestricted next summer, which would be big news for them. So if that's going to happen, now is really their time to kind of shoot their shot. I think Houston, with the right moves, has a shot to beat Golden State. I don't think the Lakers do.
It's crazy to me that Houston might even consider letting Capella hit the open market next year. That's effing bananas to me.
Well, that's not something that they would control. Most of the time, guys don't do that because it's the first time making guaranteed money. And Capella was, I think, the 25th pick or somewhere around there, where he's never really made big NBA money. So getting thrown, you know, whatever, $15 million a year to $18 million a year, I don't know what Houston's offer is for him long term. But next year, a lot of teams are going to have money. There's going to be a lot of free agents. But, you know, if he just takes the qualifying offer, that's up to him. That's, you know, not even up to Houston anymore to be able to prevent him from doing that. And so that may be his best financial play.
All right. Last thing before we get out of here, and you and I both really start prepping. I got to hydrate for Houston or for Las Vegas. It's going to be a crazy week. Last thing before we get out of here, though. Do you think Kawhi makes it to August? I think you and I are both of the agreement that he doesn't get to their training camp as a Spur. But do you think he gets to August as a member of the Spurs?
I'm going to say no, and I think he ends up on Philly.
That's interesting. That's really interesting. That makes them really freaking good. If he's healthy.
That's the thing. To me, the dots connect in that – Again, and we spoke on this on the part one of the Locked On Lakers, where there's communication difficulties with Kawhi and that he doesn't have a regular agent. So there's that those question marks about his medicals, right? And even just communication in general with the Spurs aren't going to give you 48 hours to negotiate with Kawhi. Now, they may have to end up doing that, but as of right now, like, a guy like Brett Brown has a relationship with the San Antonio organization. Lakers don't have anybody that has that. And for me, if I'm sitting in Philly's position, like, if I can put Kawhi next to Simmons and Embiid, like, I think that team walks into the finals and has a good chance to make a run at a tired Golden State team, or if Houston gets by them. But to me, like, that's a big time big three, and them saying that, like, Fultz is off the table, come on, man. Like, if you got a chance to put that big three together, and Kawhi's the oldest dude at 27, you got two other guys that are kids, you do that. And to me, like, even Jabari Young, who's very close to Kawhi and has really articulated a lot of his Kawhi's perspectives throughout this whole ordeal, has said, yeah, Kawhi would consider Philly, you know. And if – I don't know, man. To me, if that cost you Fultz and a pick and Covington, you got to do that deal.
Yeah, but there were some kind of rumors or murmurs or speculation that because they added Wilson Chandler and now that they've added Bielitsa, that maybe – it makes it a little easier to include Covington or Šarić in any kind of trade here. I don't think that matters, frankly, because it all is going to start and end with Fultz. And look, as good as a lot of people think Fultz is going to be, I think if you have a guy who was not capable of breaking the rotation in the playoffs last season because he forgot how to shoot, and you're banking on him relearning how to shoot and getting those things behind him, putting those things behind him, I would much rather gamble on whatever Kawhi Leonard might be, because I at least know that he was this at some point. We don't know that Markel Fultz was this at any point. We don't know that he'll ever be able to figure that stuff out. And you know, there are some who are going to compare not including Fultz in this trade or in this scenario to the Lakers not including Brandon Ingram. The Lakers don't have to because, A, they don't have the leverage, and, B, Brandon Ingram last year showed stuff that Fultz has yet to show, right? So,
the Lakers also don't have the opportunity to just walk into the finals. If the Lakers were in the Eastern Conference, I'd very much advocate being more aggressive on the trade market because, to me, if you can – now, you're going to have to face an amazing team from the West at some point, but it's going to be in the last series and anything can happen. Somebody can be hurt at that point. Like, imagine if Houston won that series, but Chris Paul tore his hamstring, hurt his hamstring, and was going to be out for the finals. Yeah. Things like that happen, right? All of a sudden, a team like Cleveland that really unexpectedly made it to the finals, all of a sudden, if you got Cleveland versus Houston last year with Chris Paul not playing it, they got a shot, right? Yep. So to me, if you can get to the finals and you got a really good shot at getting to the finals, that's when you have to be aggressive, and Philly's in that position.
Yep. Great way to put it. All right, that'll do it for this episode of the Locked On NBA podcast. I'm going to go out and pack and hydrate and get ready for Vegas. Those of you who are listening now who are going to be in Vegas, look us up. I'd like to meet with some of you who are listening and stuff, all that good stuff. Again, this was part two of a two-part conversation. Part one was on Locked On Lakers. You can follow that everywhere that you find this show. Adam missed the show, but he's going to be back next week. And we'll be recording in person. That'll be kind of interesting. We might fight. Like, we might come to blows. So you're going to want to pay attention to that. And then the other nice thing about Vegas is that a lot of the people who host these shows here, the Locked On NBA shows, we're also going to be mingling over the course of next week. So we might jumble up the rotation here and have people talk who don't normally talk and talk in person. Like, if John Corrales and I happen to be in the same room at the same time and record, then you're really probably going to get people coming to blows because he seems to believe that Kendrick Perkins was the difference in 2010. I think that's abjectly hilarious. But have a great rest of your day. We'll talk to you guys next week. Thanks, Pete, for hopping on for two parts here. And we'll talk to you tomorrow.